Good evening, James McKenney with my Science Hour, July 16, 2020. Too many topics to cover tonight. I won't get to them all. I'll try and concentrate on the main ones. I'll be talking about Comet Neowise, a lot of information there. Also, the Jupiter winds. And we could also include the Saturn winds, because this unusual situation, typically Saturn does not affect us a lot unless there are other extenuating circumstances in the electrical part of the solar system, not gravitational. In terms of gravity, by the way, every now and then some quack comes out and says, due to planetary alignments, gravity is going to cause earthquakes. Well, no, we are gravitationless with respect to all of the other planets. We move in, this is the whole point of general relativity, in fact, which has two aspects. And one is the part that incorrectly shows or tries to prove that the sun's mass influences light, which is totally incorrect. But the good part of general relativity is the space-time continuum, understanding that as we move through the gravitational fields of the sun and the other planets, etc., we are literally gravitationless, and we are moving along a straight line, literally through the curved space-time medium, which is an interesting way of looking at it. It's a matter of perspective. But anyway, Jupiter and Saturn happen to be completely directly aligned with Earth. That's where we live, if you haven't noticed that lately. Crazy, crazy planet Earth, that's where we live. And so we're directly aligned with both Jupiter and Saturn, which gives us a cross-solar system connection. However, we are at a very low ebb in the sun's activity. In fact, one of the lowest ebbs in the whole past century. So at any rate, there's conflicting factors here. But we are seeing the effects of what I call the Jupiter winds. The Jupiter winds are when we come electrically aligned with Jupiter, which is right now, it happens about every 13 months. The fact that we are aligned also with Saturn happens very rarely, actually. It's one of these cycle things, and I'm not going to go into that now, but it's like a counting process, and the ancients knew about such things. Especially with, for example, the new moon, or they could predict full moons, or they could predict eclipses of the moon, like the Mayas. And that's a matter of cycles, too, because, for example, the moon's orbit is at an angle, 6.5 degrees from the ecliptic. And so when the moon's orbit is such that the moon is crossing through the ecliptic at the same time it's a full moon, we get an eclipse, a solar eclipse, where the moon blocks out the sun. And then we also get a lunar eclipse where the Earth blocks the sun hitting the moon, and when the moon is on the far side of the Earth. So, but these are cycles, and they're countable, and when they match up, you can do this as a counting process, not really knowing what's going on, and that's what the Mayans were doing. It's hard to say what they really knew, but they knew the counting process, at least, and built numeric systems, very good at that. Okay, so this leads into the next topic, and I've seen people on the internet making predictions that somehow we're supposed to be going into another Maunder minimum. And what that means is back in the Middle Ages, there was a time when there was a low sunspot cycle and at the same time a very cooling period for about 75 years, which there was a lot of starvation, the crops didn't grow, the wheat. I've talked about this before, where the irony was that the bakers actually had the storehouse of flour, not the farmers, not the millers, but the bakers. And so the bakers were the only ones with food, and then they didn't give it out. And there were riots, of course, and people starved to death simply because of the weather. And, of course, that could happen again. While some people are predicting that we're going to all be baking, and due to global climate change or something, CO2, other people are saying, well, no, we're going into this solar minimum, and actually we're going to get very cold and going to have crop failures, etc. But the reality is that in the early 2000s, from about to maybe 2003 to about 2006, we had literally no sunspots. And I remember going on radio shows. I remember going on Coast to Coast regularly, and George Norrie would ask me, so Jim, are there any sunspots lately? And he was tracking it too. And I'd say, no. And we would talk about this. So the idea that having a lack or dearth of solar sunspots causing a cooling period in which all the crops are going to fail, it could not be the only factor. There's got to be some other things going on there, because we have had periods of a number of years without sunspots and then very low solar maximums, and nothing happened. And conversely, in 2000 and around the year 2000, we had two solar maximums, not one, but two, within about 9 months of each other, which is the first time that's ever been seen, a double solar maximum. And you would think, well, that would be a time of huge heating. If lack of sunspots was a time of cooling, then double sunspot, real high sunspot activity would be a sign of heating, or a precursor, or an indicator of heating. And that didn't happen either. So there's more going on here. So that's what I'm saying is, don't oversimplify climate and weather. Don't oversimplify them, because they're very complex. There are a lot of issues going on. But just back to the idea of solar winds, the Jupiter winds, we are right in the heart of that right now. And actually, we've seen some pretty amazing activity in terms of wind and storms up the East Coast last week. And if you look around in specific locations on the planet, you will see those effects, although not as pronounced as normal. Although we did have a big storm system move up through the Midwest. But then again, we're in the storm season. So we're not seeing the heavy-duty straight-line winds that are the typical Jupiter winds. They're typically straight-line winds. Although there was like 70-some mile-an-hour wind recorded in Alaska the other day, that's typical. And so there's nothing really what I'd call out of the ordinary going on. Okay, quick note on Comet Neowise. This is a comet that's visible to the naked eye right now. You may want to go out and check this out. I believe up until about tonight, it's a morning comet. And transitioning right away, it'll be an evening comet because it's going around the sun, around the far passing our line with the sun. And so it will become an evening comet from now on until mid-August. There's a lot of pictures, but what I've noticed about the photos that they're posting on the internet and allowing to be posted is they're terrible photos, terrible, terrible photos. From a distance, just very poor photos. So obviously they're trying to hide something, and I think it's a sunward spike. I would suspect by now where you would be seeing sunward spikes. But if you go on the web pages where they show photos, even photos from professional telescopes that should be extremely good, they're very grainy, they're very poor photographs. The official designation for this comet is C2020. F3, F as in Frank, 3. And it is a very bright comet, but it also was recently discovered that it had a sodium tail, which is very interesting, because our moon has a sodium tail. Mercury, the planet, has a sodium tail. And these are literally comet tails, and astronomers don't know why they are doing this. They, of course, are assuming the standard model that comets are dirty snowballs, so they assume the sodium is coming off the tail, which isn't true. It's coming into the nucleus, and what they're seeing, at least in the data from planet Mercury, were neutrals. And I've explained this. What happens is the nucleus or the planet, whichever the case, because they're all doing the same thing, discharging the solar capacitor. The planet is charging up to a negative potential because of the electron stream coming in from the sunward side. All this explained in my books. I'm not going to repeat it here. But then the ions come drifting in because they're positively charged. And then when they get into that region where there's a sea of electrons, they become neutralized and then they pass out beyond the planet or comet in the solar wind as neutrals. And so these people think that it's coming from the nucleus or from the planet, which is not true. And in the case of, for example, Mercury, supposedly it's been there for 4.5 billion years. Don't you think all of the sodium and potassium and other compounds they're finding in its tail, don't you think those would all have been bled off a long, long time ago? Well, of course. Of course they would. And so anyway, there's a long story dealing with this, but basically standard cometary science and planetary science is totally bogus, because what's happening is these tails, in fact, they've found sodium coming into planet Jupiter. And so sodium is a species, a chemical species, atomic species that we find in abundance in our solar system. And when these comets or the planets pass through these regions, and I would guarantee you that Earth has been also a member of the solar system attracting sodium. Why is that? Because we have it in the oceans. Our oceans are full of it. And so you might ask, well, why does a lake like Lake Superior not have any sodium at all? Well, that's because they're fresh lakes, because they were under the ice cap for millennium, who knows how long, maybe millions, billions of years, who knows? We don't know. But when the pole shift happened within the last 10,000 years, the physical pole shift, the old North Pole was right in that region around just east of where Lake Superior is. And they melted, boom, they melted quickly. And that carved out the St. Lawrence Seaway. The other melting carved out the Mississippi River Valley, the upper Mississippi River Valley, which is very wide and expansive, and there's no explanation for why that got carved out the way it did. It's because this melting just took place in a matter of days. Massive amounts of ice changed to water, melted away, and carved out the Mississippi River Valley. And of course, that was due to the interaction of Earth with a large comet coming by, which happened to then continue its path through the solar system to become the planet Venus, and its tail drag is what caused it to circularize its orbit and diminish its energy, which meant the elliptical orbit changed to a circular orbit, all of this explained in my books. So I'm not going to repeat it here, just the general effects. But Comet Neowise, I guarantee you, is probably sporting a very nice spike, and they don't want anybody to see this. So at any rate, just look for this, and you can see the charts on where to look, etc., on the internet in the evening sky. But basically, after the sun sets, from now on, after the sun sets, look in the west above the horizon, and you should be able to see this comet. And also, they're saying that this should be a daylight visible comet also, so you should be able to see this comet in the daylight. The other issue here is that this is on a 6,000-year orbit and will return in about 6,000 years, but this is an object that's becoming a small planet, and it will eventually work its way into the solar system. It's trapped in the solar system unless it gets flung out by an interaction, say, with Jupiter or a big planet. This thing is going to become a member of our solar system. Eventually, it will be a moon or a planet of the solar system, of the inner solar system. So this is another example, like Hale-Bopp, which is coming back in another 2,600 years. We have these members of the solar system constantly forming, and you can see it. It's right in front of your very eyes. I forgot to mention, when talking about Jupiter winds, is that we're seeing a little bit different effect this time in the form of lightning. We have seen massive lightning storms. Now, I believe there's about 90,000 lightning strikes across planet Earth every day. but we're seeing these intense localized lightning storms. And so you may see that in the news. So we're getting a little bit different effect than the straight-line Jupiter winds. We're getting lightning activity, which is very interesting. So keep your eye out for that. Quick note on Mars. This week, there are three launches going to Mars. One is from China, and one is a NASA Explorer. There's not a lot known about the mission from China other than it's pretty big. It's the size of a golf cart. And they are sending it. Now, I'm going to challenge you to keep track of this, that every foreign spacecraft that has tried to get to Mars has failed. Now, that's a very interesting statistic. So it's going to be interesting to see if China can get a spacecraft all the way to Mars. And the reason for that, my experience is that the Intel community, or shouldn't say Intel, the tier one people who think space is their personal playground do not like anybody else going to Mars. Why? Because Mars was a place where Baal, their basically god of Satan, lived. At least this is the religion that they believe, the religion of Baal, which is very active right now. Human sacrifices, human trafficking, and all of that. Yeah, this is all very active. They think their belief is, I'm just reporting what their belief is, that Baal, their leader, came from Mars, and there was a human habitation, very large one, on Mars before the Venus event, which stripped Mars of its oceans and atmosphere. One of the probes is a U.S. probe, which is going into a river basin, basically. And oddly enough, they're looking for signs of life. Now, whatever that means, are they looking for archaeological signatures there? But I guarantee you, this little rover that's been roving around Mars for decades is not the real thing. The secret space programs have had stuff on Mars, looking at it just like they have secret programs at Antarctica, looking at the ruins there of ancient civilizations that they don't want you to know about, because it would prove that the bogus history that they're teaching your kids in these stupid schools is all stupid. So they don't want people to know about this. Okay, and by the way, just a quick note here. There will be a lot of false flags and testing kids, testing positive for coronavirus, all this stuff to shut the schools down, because they want to disrupt the election. This is all about disrupting the November election to get their people in from top to bottom, from the president down to the local office, because they want to take over this country. And the Mad Max insanity that you have seen is just the beginning. So I just want to point out, too, that if you see the fake news, all they talk about is the number of increase in cases, testing positive. There's not talking about the deaths. They're talking about, this doctor says their emergency room is full. Well, there's no proof of that. This is all the same fake news as we went through before. But they're talking about the test results, which is a bogus test. That's been proven. The test has nothing to do with coronavirus or COVID-19 or anything. So all they're doing is talking about this great increase in number of cases. It's all baloney. And it's all fake. I mean, the people aren't going to get tests. People are going about their lives now. You don't have millions of people running around getting tested. So they're just making this up. It's just complete fake news. Jumping to a new topic, George Floyd, the guy that died in Minneapolis, and they allegedly died anyway, but the story is now that he died of an overdose of methamphetamines. And this was known about by the Minneapolis attorney and the medical group there, and they hid it from the public. So all of this time, they're accusing policemen, arresting policemen of killing this guy. It was known that he died from an overdose of drugs, and he was in the process of dying when they picked him up. He was, you know, he was going out, as you might say. And so, at any rate, that's the official story now. This guy died from an OD on drugs. Then the ensuing rampage through Minneapolis caused $500 million. That's right, $500 million worth of damage. And that the governor has the nerve, who let all of this happen, did not call in. He could have called in FEMA. He could have called in the National Guard. He could have called in federal troops even and support. He could have called in federal assistance of support to dispel the rioting, etc. Didn't do anything. Just let it roll and told the police to stand down. Now they're asking the federal government for $500 million to bail them out so that they can rebuild the city of Minneapolis. The federal government told them, nope, that's a local issue. You let it happen, you go pay for it. You go fix it. So anyway, the absolute insanity that's going on. And also, just along with this, XL Energy is trying to get $2 to $3 billion in bailout money for their two nuclear power plants, Prairie Island and Monticello, which are aging and completely in disrepair. And I've talked about this before, but these companies were supposed to keep money in a slush fund by federal law to decommission the power plants when they got to this stage of their life. They haven't saved the money. Who knows what happened to the money? It was supposed to be a national program, but that's what's going on. You're going to see this all over the country where these aged nuclear power plants are basically going under. They're all leaking. And I wrote a letter to the president through Robert David Steele, and I said, you got to shut down all the nuclear power plants. Just shut them down. And one thing is, we can all do a conservation. If you can make everybody wear a mask, you can certainly make everybody turn off the lights, you know, turn off the excess lighting. One third of our electricity in the United States goes towards lighting. And so if you reduce just by 50% the amount of lighting that we use, mostly wasted. If you fly over the country at night, you see all the lights on, 2 in the morning. You know, most of that light is wasted. And most of it goes up as heat because the lights generate a lot of heat. And so by changing over to more efficient light bulbs, etc., we could literally shut down all of the nuclear power plants. They only provide 17% of our electricity in the United States. We could shut down the entire fleet of nuclear power plants today by simply turning off the light switch and be done with this absolute insanity. There are people trying to say that, oh, nuclear is green, we got to go back to nuclear. There's one nuclear power plant being built in the United States today. The San Onofre power plant out in California was an absolute disaster. It was only operating for a number of years, and then they had to shut it down. I think they had major problems there. There were 10 different excuses that I've heard for why San Onofre shut down. But the bottom line, $5 billion to decommission that plant, brand new plant, and, you know, absolute insanity once again. But there are no new nuclear power plants being built. So this idea that somehow nuclear is green and doesn't put out carbon dioxide is insane. It doesn't account for the fact that nuclear, just like coal and natural gas or geothermal, etc., all produce energy into the atmosphere right now because they're only about 30% at best efficient. Probably quite after you get the distribution system and everything accounted for, they're probably around 25% efficient. That means that about 75% of the heat goes into the atmosphere right now, not waiting around for CO2 to cause some kind of little tweak of a heating. You're talking massive amounts of heat going into the atmosphere right now. And so, you know, this is the thing. That's because the very ill-educated populace of the world, ill-educated especially in science or logic, don't understand that it's not about CO2. It's about the amount of heat being generated and put into the atmosphere right now. And nobody talks about that. And then but this is the GE plan from the very beginning. I talk about this in my book, which I wrote in 2009, over 10 years ago, and released at the McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project. I have a chapter in there on the myth of alternative energy and the discussion that GE and Siemens would go back to nuclear power and try and promote it once everybody figured it out that their three-blade wind turbines and solar panels don't work on a large scale, that is, to replace the world energy, then the goal will be to go back, oh, gee, we got to go back to that really nice General Electric and Siemens nuclear power plants. What a scam. What an absolute scam, but it's happening. That's what the Michael Moore movie is all about. He made a lot of money from GE and Siemens putting that movie out to trash three-blade wind turbines and solar, which they should be. But the point they're missing is that there are viable solutions. And, of course, nobody wants to talk about that. There's a web page, and these are like draws. These are like hooks, like clickbait. It's called What's Up With That? And I have some friends that follow this regularly, but what I've discovered is that's a very controlled web page. And what they do is they lay out this thing for like the people that say climate change is not real or that three-blade wind turbines are no good or solar is no good. So they lay this out and they put out actually a lot of very good information, which is true. But then the hook is, they want you to believe, actually, and it's very interesting, but they want you to believe that nuclear power is the solution. So these are hooks. These are fishing bait. They're baited websites, very, very nicely designed, very, you know, well-maintained with a lot of information. But the hook is that once they get you in there and you're thinking, oh, these guys are really on our side, they're really being controlled by General Electric. And the whole point is to get you to then go back and think that nuclear is a very good deal. So it's just amazing the amount of disinformation and how they work this to take the public that is well-meaning, well-intentioned, and understand the real issues and twist them into the narrative that they want. It's amazing. The amount of time that these people spend and how effective they are at grabbing people's attention. Like I say, and people that are very well educated as to the real issues, and it grabs them and then it takes them through this process. And then all of a sudden there's the 90-degree right turn with the to turn them into the disinformation that they're trying to put out there. I mean, this is highly, highly professional disinformation planning. Okay, just a quick note here. A 24-year-old mother of three kids, shot three times and killed by the Black Lives Matter people in Indianapolis. The shooters ran away. There's nobody knows who these are, who shot her. But, I mean, young, and of course she's white. Nobody talks about this, never made anything in the news. So clearly, and her comment was somebody was yelling at her, Black Lives Matter, and she said her response, her dying words were, all lives matter. And as they shot her, three different people shot her, once in the head, once in the leg or something, and then ran away. No repercussions at all. So, and that, I'm putting it on this show because it did not make any sort of news media at all. I want to get back to this topic of schools opening and schools, what's going on. Of course, schools would open in the fall just right before the election. And here's what's going on. They have installed 5G in most places, in the shutdown, universities, schools, high schools, etc. And what's going on? Now, let me make some comments on 5G. And this is something that's not very well understood in the public. I worked for 25 years of my life in telecommunications, something that I never disclosed before, because if I would have, people would have gone after me and would have gone after my job. And so I had very high-level security positions in telecommunications companies, one of them designing the hardware, the encryption and everything else that went in very sophisticated network hardware for telecommunication networks for some of the biggest governments and companies in the world. And so, like I say, a very high-level security job. So I understand about telecommunications and microwave technology and things like that. But 5G is a very new thing. Now, there are two aspects to this. One is the telecommunications part. Is it a good advancement or not? From a true telecommunications standpoint, it's not a good technology because you need so many towers. You need so many towers and they're so close together. It's putting the power up in the tower. And I've talked about this before where, as an example, back in the early satellite TV days, they had these big, they're 3-meter dishes. I used to sell them from MACOM. It was a business that I had. And that was the original television antenna for satellite. And the reason the antenna was so big is because there was not much power in the satellite, the transmitting station. So Stanley Hubbard, who I knew not real well, but I'd been in his office, I talked to him, Stanley Hubbard and his son put together what is now DirecTV. They put together the first small satellite dish system where you put all the power in the satellite. And very successful, of course. And so then the satellite dish, the receiver, could be very small because you put all the power up in the satellite. Well, the same thing is happening with 5G. They're putting all the power up in the satellite or up in the transmission station, or in the case of what Elon Musk is doing, up in the satellite. You put all this power up there, so then you don't need much power down into the, you know, this is dealing with AI, artificial intelligence, driving cars, all kinds of artificial intelligence manufacturing, all kinds of supposed benefits for your household. And this is using 5G. So the power of 5G goes into the central transmitting station. So that also means that your receiver, your telephone, your chip that goes in your arm when you get vaccinated for supposed alleged coronavirus, that receiver can be very small because all the power is up in the antenna or in the satellite. This causes a problem because now you have all of this high-powered microwave radiation going all over the place, and it's mood affecting. It can affect all kinds of other things. And for crowd control, it can be used to agitate groups. In fact, it's very probable that it was used for the crowds and crowd control during the recent riots. And so we've seen riots that had an element of crowd control that's never been there before. There have been crowd control mechanisms used throughout history, but never at the level of 5G. So 5G is not just a telecommunications transmission protocol or electrical signaling electronics. It is also a very dangerous issue, and I've been some people tried to call me to task on this on radio shows, and I'll just say specifically that this is something that I personally have not had time to research. There's a lot of evidence and there's a lot of people who are talking about this. There's a lot of people presenting evidence which I would call non-evidence, like empirical evidence. And also, if you do something in a laboratory, that does not mean that it translates to the real world. So if you take a cell in a laboratory and expose it to 5G radiation at close range, what happens there is not necessarily what happens in the real world when you put 5G up on a tower or in a school. But there is a more nefarious side of 5G, and that is that the signaling has two components, one for telecommunication, one for people control and manipulation, and whether it be health, whether it be, so there's two sides to this coin. It's a two-edged sword. And I don't think there's a lot of real data on this, but in Turkey, they've outlawed it. There are places in around the world where they've outlawed this, but make no mistake, it's already installed in the United States. it rolled out years ago, where they were doing testing and rolling and locating exactly where they should put the towers. And you can go online and you can find the map of 5G locations, one near you. And I've said this before, that they can now use 5G in a, it's a complex manner of using wave technology to concentrate waves by synchronizing the wave patterns on a certain place. Let's use an example. Say you have a big pool of water, and you have little fingers that can move in and out of the water, and that creates waves. Okay, so you have, let's say, three of these locations in your pool, which is perfectly flat, perfectly calm, and you have these three fingers that can go in and make waves at a certain point. Okay, well, if you coordinate the frequency of those three points of transmitting waves, you can pick a point out in your pool someplace and say, I want to maximize the wave signal at that point, right where Johnny is sitting, or right where Susie is sitting in her chair. And all of a sudden, Johnny or Susie is being irradiated with radiation, and of course, they don't know this, and it starts affecting their behavior. All of a sudden, they become violent, they become uneasy, they become disturbed, and they don't know why. That's what 5G can do, and they can do it to crowd control. That's why they want social distancing, because 5G cannot determine people. It cannot do face recognition if the people are too close together. So at any rate, all of these AI technologies, some madman might think that this is great and we'll move into this world of AI, but looking from a human perspective, it's an absolute disaster. So in spite of the fact that Elon Musk, I think, is doing great things with his automobile, and he's just became $7 billion richer the other day because of Tesla automobiles, the work they've done on batteries, the work he's doing with SpaceX, getting into space, etc. Amazing engineering work. But the 5G stuff, excuse me, no, this is off-the-wall madness. So some people are doing good things, some people are doing not-so-good things. But 5G has to be trimmed back and eliminated, but it's being rolled out without anybody's permission. The end effect is not just being radiated, but the information gathering that it can also bring in terms of everything you do. If you have a chip put in you, which you should not do, do not allow them to put a shot in you, and do not take the coronavirus test. There are indications that they actually can put a chip in somebody with the coronavirus test, the fake coronavirus test. Let me just make sure I put that in there. So once again, 5G, not just a telecommunications electrical signaling protocol. It is being misused, and it is very dangerous for many reasons. Okay, changing subjects just a little bit here. I'm going to talk about hoaxes, and then I lead up to current day. But remember the Cold War? That was the hoax of all hoaxes. The Cold War was when I was growing up, and I asked a friend of mine that's quite a bit younger than I am that was in grade school in the 70s, and he said they were still doing this when he was in grade school. They would have the kids on a, you know, have a siren go off. They had these air raid sirens all over town. And you could see them as like the 5G of the day or the coronavirus of the day. But as little kids, we were in school. I remember in grade school, second, third grade. And we would have to get under our desks because the Russians were, it was a drill, because allegedly the Russians were bombing us at any time. And there would be boop, 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 you know, a big siren going off, and we'd be under our desks thinking that everybody in the big city near us would be blown up by a nuclear bomb in any minute. And they were talking about 100 megaton bombs and the Russians and rockets. And this is what they were teaching to little kids. They were teaching this to little kids and scaring the piss out of them. Excuse my expression, but that's what they were doing. Okay, so that came and went. Reagan finally broke the Soviet Union, the USSR. As the Beatles would say, back in the USSR, don't know how lucky you are. But then, okay, let's move up to 2000, the millennium bug. And I happened to be working in a telecommunications industry at the time, and they all went bananas. They said, oh, you have to shut down all the computers. And these are computer geeks. And there was nothing, there was never, ever an issue with the 2000 millennium bug. It was a non-issue. But they blew it up. They covered the news media with it. And all of the, here's the point, all of the managers of these telecommunications companies freaked out and were running around, and they had all kinds of meetings and how, what are we going to do to prevent this? And really, there was never an issue ever at all, because computers recycled their registers all the time. Computer registers are not infinite in size, and they don't end on a particular date, like a physical date. It was just a non-issue. It was a non-issue. And by the way, this was due to Microsoft. And that's what is a very interesting point, too, is that Microsoft was behind this millennium bug bullshit. And that's the, I can't use any other word. That's the only thing, Bill Gates, once again, Billy, that jerk that we know, that geek with glasses with money because of his parents, his mom and dad, mommy and daddy got him his deals that got him into being rich. Okay, so the millennium bug was a hoax. Let's move forward to 2012, the Mayan calendar. We're all going to die on December 21st, 2012. Remember that? I spent a lot of time. Or how about 2003, May 15th? Planet X is going to come and we're all going to die. Another giant hoax. Mayan calendar, end of the universe. Just promoted, complete hoax, had no meaning at all. And the Mayan calendar, I know a lot about the Mayan calendar. It had nothing to do with December 21st, 2012, and there was no end to the Mayan calendar or a cycle into New World Order or what. It's just complete baloney. Okay. And how, yeah, I already talked about the Cold War, but how about the 2020 coronavirus hoax? And how about the vaccination hoax, that they're going to somehow develop a vaccination and you can't go anyplace until you get your vaccination and your vaccination card, which shows you've been vaccinated with the fake virus for the fake coronavirus, for the fake vaccination for the fake coronavirus. The reason I'm leading up to this is because this fall we are going to have another one. And I haven't got it completely defined yet, because I don't know. I can't foresee all of the things that they're going to pull, but it's going to include NASA and it's going to include the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, the National Weather Service. So, and I don't know, and I saw just yesterday, the news recently has been filled with, oh, an asteroid's going to collide with Earth in 2059. And then when you read down into it, they say, no, it's never going to happen. But it's the headline. They're trying to throw out headlines to make people, because that's what people remember. They don't read the article, etc. So anyway, the hoaxes are going to continue to come, because the mainstream media is a hoax in itself. There's one other topic dealing with electricity in outer space I want to get to, but I'm going to leave it to the end if I have time. This is a very important topic coming up. It's called food shortage, and I've been talking about this for a long time. That's why I'm selling the grow towers. The grow towers, the vertical towers, and people are responding quite well to these. To grow in now, by the way, is a good time to get one of these, set it up, and you can have crops, growing. You can put it out on your deck or outside, and then when fall comes, move it inside and grow, say, if you have a window that has good sun facing south or in a southerly direction. But now would be a very good time to get one of these. But there's a food shortage that's coming. Right now in Canada, they are destroying entire crops. They're taking potatoes and just dumping them into a hole. I mean, it's just absolutely insane what's going on here. But the reason I'm doing this is because this is the communist tactic. One is to cause chaos in a country. to create corruption in the political parties, and that's been going on for decades, and to divide and conquer. In other words, this whole idea of racism is to, and racism is just one issue. They're trying to divide it on the term of the coronavirus, people wearing masks, people not wearing masks. The more divisions you can create in a country, the worse it is. People that are in favor of the family versus people that want abortions. And, you know, I mean, divide and conquer is the ticket. And that's what they're doing. Now you have people in the Republican Party that are opposing Trump because he found out that Fauci is a weasel. I mean, I knew that the day I saw that weasel Fauci. You know, and then everybody knew he's the one that caused the coronavirus lab leak out of China. He's the one that funded the Wuhan laboratory. Little Fauci. Yeah, little weasel. But anyway, what I'm saying is now that Trump has come out and putting this guy in his corner, then people like Lindsey Graham come out and say, oh, no, he opposes that. And it's divide, divide, divide. If you throw enough of these issues out there, you know, if you have the Black Lives Matters come through and then the guy's defending his homes with his AR-47 and then they come and take the guy's gun away, you know, basically taking away his Second Amendment rights and on and on and on. I mean, divide, divide, divide is what it's all about. But I want to read something here. I want to read something. It's called, this was brought to my attention thanks to a listener who sent this in, and I read this, and I thought, you know, I'm going to read this on the air. And in the Ukraine, a lot of people don't understand the history of the Ukraine. The Ukraine has been in a tug of war for independence, and of course, it's right next to Russia. And the Ukraine is where the gas, the natural gas, the oil, and the wheat, the crops are, the food basket. It's the Ukraine is the breadbasket of Russia. It would be like taking Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Ohio. Take those states and take them out of the United States and all of a sudden put them under the control of some other country. And all of a sudden we don't have any food. That's what this is like. But anyway, the term is called Holodomor. And that's a Ukrainian word. It's a combination word of Holodomor, which is hunger, and then more is death. So it's death by hunger, and another starvation is the actual term. But this is an article that was written by Anne Applebaum, and I'm going to read this on my show here, so I want to give proper credit. And it's on Ukrainian history. And this was she was a columnist, foreign policy columnist for the Washington Post. And she is also, it says, a professor of practice at the London School of Economics, where she runs ARENA, and then goes on to explain. But at any rate, this is the Holodomor, or the Great Famine of 1932 and 33. And this was in the Ukraine, and then, of course, it went into Russia. And this was instigated by Stalin, and it became, this is my point, it became political, that where they could take people who are favorable to the Russian government and give them food, and the people who were not favorable politically starved to death. So it became a political motivated, and they had, like, the little governors out in the communities identifying who would get food and who would not get food. Now, this is where this is going. If you haven't smelled this coming, and, you know, you have your calls on the phone, all of which are being monitored, etc. You might go to meetings where you give your opinion on something, and then the neighbors notice, oh, this guy was talking about such and such a thing. And if the far left ever gets power in the United States, this is what is coming. So with that said, let me read this. And I'm just going to take bits and pieces of this, because I don't have a lot of time. But once again, this is Anne Applebaum who wrote this article, Holodomor. Man-made famine, I'm reading now from the article. Man-made famine that convulsed the Soviet Republic of Ukraine from 1932 to 1933, peaking in the late spring of 1933. So peaking in the springtime, which would, in the United States, peak next spring. Okay, I've just inserted that. Okay, reading again. It was part of a broader Soviet famine, 1931 to 1934, that also caused mass starvation in the grain-growing regions of Soviet Russia and Kazakhstan. Okay, I'm going to just segue here and explain something. Now, these are the areas that had food, lots of food, lots and lots of grain. These were the centers of food production, and the people starved to death. So, where is this going? Ukrainian words for hunger, holod, and extermination, more. So that's the meaning of holodormo, is extermination by hunger. Okay, so then they have a lot of pictures of like little kids laying on the street, starving to death, etc. Okay, so now I'm going to read again. Just as I read this, just consider this is today in the United States. The origins of the famine lay in the decision by Soviet leader Joseph Stalin to collectivize agriculture in 1929. You see that happening today with the shutting down of agricultural farms, packing plants, meat packing plants, all over coronavirus fear, etc. Okay, I'm going to keep reading here. Teams of Communist Party agitators forced peasants to relinquish their land, personal property, and sometimes housing to collective farms, and they deported the so-called kulaks, wealthier peasants, as well as any peasants who resisted collectivization altogether. Collectivization led to drop in production, the disorganization of the rural economy, and food shortages. Okay, I'm going to skip down here and read a little bit. They got a picture of Joe Stalin there. Okay, now listen to this. The elite leadership of the Soviet Communist Party took a series of decisions that widened and deepened the famine in the Ukraine countryside. Farms, villages, and whole towns in Ukraine were placed on blacklists and prevented from receiving food. Peasants were forbidden to leave the Ukraine Republic in search of food. The crisis reached its peak in the winter of 1932 and 33 when organized groups of police and communist apartheid chicks ransacked the homes of peasants and looked for everything edible, from crops to personal food supplies to pets. Hunger and fear drove these actions, but they were reinforced by more than a decade of hateful and conspiratorial rhetoric. Now, what does this sound like? Defund the police and install, this is what happened in Germany, you defund the police and then you fund them on a national level. And then the national police come in and turn this into a political to kill off these people. Okay, I'm going to continue to read. Between 1931 and 34, at least 5 million people perished of hunger all across the USSR. Among them, according to a study conducted by a team of Ukrainian demographers, were at least 3.9 million Ukrainians. Many were able to survive thanks to ration cards. Okay, so anyway, certain people were allowed to get ration cards where they could get food, but these, okay, I'm going to continue reading. You'll see that it's because of political connections. The famine was accompanied by a broader assault on Ukrainian identity. While peasants were dying by the millions, agents of the Soviet secret police were targeting the Ukraine political establishment and intelligentsia. The famine provided cover for a campaign of repression and persecution that was carried out against Ukrainian culture and Ukrainian religious leaders. So you see the churches folding today like an old suit, giving in because they know they want to be on the list when it comes to getting food. They already know this. So a lot of the churches are being like weasels and not standing up for the people. Okay, reading again. All those targeted by this campaign were liable to be publicly vilified, jailed, sent to the gulag, labor camps, or executed. Those were the people that stood up and resisted. Western journalists based in Moscow were instructed not to write about it. Fake news? Listen to this. One of the most famous Moscow correspondents of the time, Walter Duranty, published by a young freelancer. Start this over again. One of the most famous Moscow correspondents of the time, Walter Duranty of the New York Times, went out of his way to dismiss reports of the famine when they were published by a young freelancer, Gareth Jones, as he thought Mr. Jones' judgment was somewhat hasty. Jones was murdered under suspicious circumstances in 1935 in Japanese-occupied Mongolia. Now, we find our good friends from the New York Times involved in that time in covering up in Russia. Okay, boys and girls, if you don't see this happening in your country right now, then you're blind. This is the Communist Manifesto at work. So that's why I'm selling the food grow towers. You have to have green. You can have storage food. You can have a yard full of storage food. But what you need are greens, fresh greens, as part of your diet. Otherwise, all that other food will actually make you sick. If that's all you eat, you need the green to get the fresh enzymes, etc. And so that's why I'm selling the grow towers, because you need that in a long-term period. And besides, if there is no food shortage, if I'm totally wrong about this, you have very good food for the table. And I would recommend that people get at least one tower. There is a package with three towers. That's what I would recommend. And over the lifetime, your lifetime and your kids' lifetime, that will certainly pay for itself over and over again. But this is where things are going. And so also the wing generator, there's a lot of people who want to get off the grid. Remember that. Just write in to the webpage. It's on listed on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And there's an email address there, and email in there. And if you have not heard back, if you've written for the water study, things like that, we're just actually being inundated, and we're going to get to all of these. One of my projects for this weekend is to get caught up on all my past work. And so, I've been a busy guy, and bringing this radio show to you commercial-free, going on 2 decades now, going into the 3rd decade, is a very important part of my life, because I bring important information to you. There's never a shortage of, a dearth of misinformation out there. And I have people listening to my shows from back 15, 20 years ago, and they're saying how spot on I was at that time. So, yeah, I've been around the block, been kicked around a few times, more than a few times. And so I got my PhD from the School of Hard Knocks. I got my master's degree from the real school, Tulane University. I got my PhD from the School of Hard Knocks and learning in the real world. So remember the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.